This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
How would you feel if you could never get your wedding photos? If they were bad photos, maybe you'd be grateful for that, but I think most of us would be a little sad. A collection of 24 photos from what looks like a gay wedding held in 1957 have turned up in the United States. Three filmmakers and storytellers are making a TV show as they search for the gents in the photos and try to return the pictures to them or their families. Arian Potts followed up on that story.
These photos have a white border with a sort of postage stamp cut on the edges, just like my parents' snapshots from the 50s. In one, two men are embracing. One has wavy brill-creamed hair, the other has a bit of a messy part falling across his face, and they look into each other's eyes deeply. They're both sporting white carnations in their suit lapels. Another photo shows the couple looking down as they hold a knife together, cutting a large white wedding cake. They're both smiling gently, almost a smirk, but not quite. The photos were dropped off at a Philadelphia photo store. One of the workers kept the photos, and these guys never got their prints back. Three filmmakers and storytellers in Los Angeles stumbled across the photographs at the One Archive in LA. Now they're on a mission to find out who was in the photos and return them to the men and their families, if they can. I spoke with PJ Palmer, Michael J. Wolf, and Neil Baer about their quest to find out more. Here's Neil.
I saw the photos and immediately was overwhelmed emotionally by their power and the fact that these men turned in their film and never received their photos back. So I invited Michael and PJ to see them. They're friends of mine and they're also writers, and they went and saw them also.
We all shared a pretty similar response, which was we're deeply moved by them. They were so arresting. They're so happy and joyous in the pictures. And I was not expecting to see that on my tour of the One Archives. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to see, but I wasn't expecting to see this beautiful gay wedding from the 1950s. And then it was also uncanny, and it felt like, oh, this is so right. Of course it's here. We've always been here. So there was like a deep comfort in looking at them as well.
When I first saw them, just like Michael and Neil, really overwhelmed, which was really surprising. I'm not easily emotionally overwhelmed by things, but there was also a bit of shock. I mean, in the sense like, oh, this even existed. I felt like I was looking at something that was very, very special because I'd never seen anything quite like it. It took me a while to understand that, yeah, people did have ceremonies. They did have commitments. And sure, maybe people did get married long before gay marriage, or even in the 50s or before then. But until I saw those photos, it had never occurred to me. And I think the other thing that really struck us is that these are family photos. These belong in a family photo album. You know, they're not professionally taken. They seem to be taken by an amateur photographer. They're not set up the way a wedding photographer would set up pictures. They look like a guest who was there, took a bunch of pictures, and they kind of look like every other wedding photo I've ever seen in my family albums and anybody's family albums, except that they're two men. And that was really moving and overwhelming and kind of shocking.
You know, we're all storytellers and filmmakers, and I think it took us about less than a week after we had toured the One Archives to kind of, I think we texted each other in a group text and just said, God, that was a really great tour or whatever. And then immediately following that was, we have to do something. We have to find these men. We have to figure out the story. You know, the story just begged us. It was just calling us.
How did the photos get their way into the archive?
They were donated by some collectors, and the way that they obtained them is that they bought them online on eBay when they were put up by the woman whose mother had kept them. And this was a woman in Philadelphia who worked at a photo shop. And when the film was turned in, she never returned the film back to the grooms. We've heard that she thought that they were, quote, hilarious and held on to them for showing privately to people. When she passed away, her daughter found them, felt that they needed to go out somewhere, and she wasn't able to locate the grooms, of course, because it was so many years later, but that's what our journey is.
Photographs are circa 1957. I believe some of that comes from the memory, people who found the photographs and their belongings, and just based on when they would have, her mother worked there. Also clothing, but it's circa 1957, so that's give or take a few years.
Can you describe the gay rights climate at that time?
It's such a good question, and it's a complicated answer, because depending on who you speak to, you know, we've spoken to a lot of elders who say, we were having a blast. Our lives were fantastic. We were in love. We were happy. You know, things were okay. However, that's not a completely accurate picture for everybody, obviously. So when you consider Philadelphia in the 50s, they were under a really oppressive kind of administration and a police force at the time. And Frank Rizzo would rise to power as police chief. And he was raiding the gay bars. He was arresting people in the streets for being in drag, not afraid of force. And so I think that there was a tremendous amount of fear and a tremendous amount of secrecy, a sense of not being safe just by being who one was.
I mean, you know, this was a time period when in Philadelphia, and I believe in New York, but we know, also New York, the gay bars were mostly owned by the mob. And they were often being shook down by the mob and then raided by the police. This wasn't because the mob was gay friendly necessarily, but they were the organizations that would run a bar like this, one that might be under the radar of the police or of the public as a whole. But the police raids were common. And you know, we spoke with bar owners who are still alive in Philadelphia who owned bars back in the 50s. And we even spoke with one who opened his bar. He opened a coffee shop when he was 19, and it was basically an LGBTIQ coffee shop at that time. He couldn't say it out loud, but this is where all the gay kids hung out who couldn't drink yet. And even though it was just a coffee shop and it was just a bunch of artists and gay kids hanging out, he ended up getting arrested himself by Rizzo and beaten over it. And then he went on to make many more bars through the years, and you know, he didn't back down. Kind of a dangerous time. People were literally being raided and then beat by the police.
The pictures resonate because, as Michael and PJ have said, they show such a happy celebratory moment. And what lay in store was pretty dire. The AIDS epidemic. We don't know what happened to these men. We don't know what happened to the other men in the photos. So we really want to find out. It's part of the story. And we know what came after these photos. But then also, they, you know, were such pathbreakers because they didn't know that gay marriage would be legalized. And so their celebration is legal today.
That really sets what the kernel of it all was. But as we've moved through the many, many stories we've come across as we and talk to people all over the country and who send us leads or bring in stories of their history, I think what we're really finding is that that queer history has been erased. It's been suppressed. And the TV show is sort of small way to help bring some of these stories back into the light that would never have seen the light of day. And while that wasn't what we set out to do at the very beginning was always to find the guys and give them back their photos. But it's how it's grown, and it has grown from all the stories that many, many people were talking to and learning about. I don't think I understood how much history there is and how much it was suppressed systematically. And I don't know that it was always suppressed on purpose. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know there's always been a big boogeyman out there suppressing things by name. It's been just sort of the way society's working. I mean, sure, there has been that, but there also it's just been suppressed, something you don't talk about. It's the aunt that, you know, is a spinster, or that's what you call her, and she's got a friend. And you know, these photographs, I never saw photographs like this in my family albums, and I could have used that as a kid. And I think all of us could have, having seen happy, grown adults who feel what you feel in some way, and that you're okay, just by looking at your own family. And we don't have that. That's been hidden and suppressed. There's plenty of gay people out there. There always have been. But the history is just really, really closed off. And it's not just these pictures. There's other items in those archives we'd like to go tell stories about and continue to sort of, bring these lost stories back out into the light and into the collective history of the world.
PJ Palmer ending that interview with Michael J. Wolf and Neil Baer. The photos can be found on the project website, ouronestory.com. That's ouronestory.com. I'm Arian Potts for The Informer.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.